You gotta wait for the woo. All right, 720 WGN. It is On the Road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue on what is an exciting sports day. Everybody's kind of got Loyola fever, kind of ramping up for all that stuff. Before the end of the program, we're going to talk about it. Got some history. I asked Camille, of course, she's Ball State, right? That's where you're from.
Chirp, chirp.
Yep. And but so many people, a lot of people here at the station have Loyola connections. I had some connections with Joe Gentile, and that's where they play in the Joe Gentile Center. So we'll share some of that as we get out on the program. As mentioned, with Scott, an eclectic blend, we've got we're going to visit with a couple drivers from Don Schumacher Racing, people from the area who love racing and know racing. Know Don Schumacher from the Palatine, Arlington Heights area. He's down in Texas now, one of the top race teams, not only with his son Tony, but so many great drivers. We're going to visit with Ron Capps. We are also going to visit with Tommy Johnson Jr., so stay tuned for both of those guys. We're going to have features with them. And then Stan Kalwaczynski is going to talk some amazing and unknown history of motorsports in the Chicagoland area. This is a treat. I think he's going to be on with us a little bit after three and kind of following the line of celebration. If you're going to want to get out there and celebrate, hopefully, don't want to jinx it, Loyola making the Final Four. Glenn Fiddick, so Tracy Franklin, she is the national brand ambassador for one of the oldest and most revered Scotch whiskeys, and that would be, I think, a good choice for your celebratory cocktail. She'll be with us as well in a little bit. Also, the bona fide ride of the show, your first car, favorite car, dream car, call in and talk to Camille, 312-981-7200. You can text in some pictures as well, and we'll figure out how best to give you a $25 gift card as they celebrate their first location in Indiana, Schererville, Indiana. We'll talk about that a little bit as well. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got Ron Capps locked and loaded, so stay tuned. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN.
Hey, this is Ron Capps, driver of the Napa Auto Parts Nitro Funny Car, and you're On the Road with Dane on WGN.
WGN On the Road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, and honored to have on the line with the driver of the iconic Napa Funny Car for Don Schumacher Racing, a world champion in the sport, second all-time in NHRA Funny Car wins, one of the true greats, the honorable and amazing Ron Capps. Welcome to WGN.
Man, Dane, I'm going to have you introduce me to every room I walk in. That was probably the best... That was by far the best introduction I've ever had.
Are you serious? Well, wait till you...
Honorable and iconic. Oh, my gosh.
And, hey, you know what? If you look back, I think you've got to start reviewing a little bit of your stats and go through your own bio because, you know, you have been doing this for a long time. It has been, obviously, a love and a passion, one of the greats, and you've, you know, done it at the very highest level and all that. And as NHRA is looking to get out there, be more things to more people, get more fans... I've always said it. I've said it to the listeners, and I know we've brought a bunch of people to the tracks and to the sport, is that it's one of those sports that if you can see it in person live, there is nothing like it. And typically, you will get hooked, and it just doesn't translate as well to TV. Looking, you know, we all know, of course, you know, your mom was pregnant with you at the track, so you had kind of a jump start on things. But talk a little bit about that, you know, as you try to not only do what you do on the track, but also get new fans and kind of engage people as that ambassador to sport to bring in new NHRA fans.
Yeah, no, it's you're right. The sport is it's like going to a Blackhawks game and never, but only watching on TV and getting there for the first time. There's something about the sport that once you've been there and you felt the vibration, the you know these cars are over 11,000 horsepower, fire breathing, you know 0 to 330 miles an hour right in front of your eyes, kind of a feeling when you're there at the track. Once you see one live and then you watch it on TV, it changes your perception of everything. So. It is. It's a great sport. I grew up on it. Like you said, I was conceived, I think, in the parking lot of a racetrack in California. So my mom and dad, thankfully, brought me into the sport growing up, and it's just been a lot of fun to, you know, I couldn't think of a better sport to make a living at, that's for sure. And I don't have a big company my parents own or anything to fall back on. If my whole adult life has been drag racing, and I've been lucky enough to be surrounded with great, great owners, Don Prudhomme and now Don Schumacher, who hails from Chicago.
Yep.
And two legendary owners at that. And then, of course, 10 years going on with Napa Auto Parts as a sponsor. And you don't hear too often of somebody, that association, like Richard Petty and the STP, and, you know, just these Jimmy Johnson and Lowe's. That sort of thing in motorsports is hard to come by now where you have that length of sponsorship. We always looked at Kenny Bernstein and Budweiser, you know. It was, right. That length of that sponsorship kind of made you you want to try to achieve something like that in life.
Well, Ron, okay, so a little bit humble. You're like, hey, maybe you shouldn't be introduced a certain way, but you should, because those iconic brands that really, you know, are kind of the physical embodiment of motors and motorsports and the industry and all that, those relationships, that's a testament to the success that you have had on the track, you know, and it's that kind of thing, I think, that is important. Do you feel any extra pressure, or is it just something that you're comfortable, you wear it well, it's the way that you've done things? But yeah, I mean, Napa, that's huge, and to have it for that extended period of time is really great.
Yeah, you know, and I used to get up on the soapbox and just try to get these people to come out to our races, and I've always been a huge rock and roll fan, and so music has kind of always driven me, and so to be able to get to be friends with some of my heroes growing up, the James Hetfield now, Metallica's a good friend, these other athletes that I have always looked up to and watched, and now to have them come out to a race, it blows my mind, because I can take them sort of backstage at the racetrack and show them something that completely blows them away, much like going to watch them play. And so I've always had to feel like I was on a soapbox bragging about our sport, and then all of a sudden our sport this last, especially 3 or 4 years, has just blown up. So now I'm getting these phone calls of people asking to come out, and that's a great feeling after all these years.
See, that is so, I mean, and you have said it too. You may not be able to be there selling tickets and doing sponsorships and coming out and kind of, you know, getting the stands together and kind of raising the crowd size and all that in maybe the traditional way, but by sharing it with people who do have that platform to reach masses of fans that you know that they like the same kind of things that you will, I think that would be great. My summer job growing up was I worked, you know, backstage at Alpine Valley, which is right here, it's over the border in Wisconsin, one of the largest outdoor music theaters, and Metallica, you know, I was at the Metallica tour, you know, where they opened up for Ozzy Osbourne. The original bassist was still playing at the time. And so think about this, and this is weird that you make that connection, because you think about it. So let's say Formula One, maybe it's like classical music, right? Maybe NASCAR is sort of country rock, maybe rock and roll a little bit. There is no sport in the world of auto racing that closely identifies with heavy metal, right, than drag racing and NHRA. Is it the kind of thing when you bring some of your friends to the track that they are as blown away by what you do as you are by them?
Yeah, absolutely. Every race, even we started the year out in Pomona just a few weeks ago, and it's Los Angeles, and every actor in the world lives there, and a lot of the rock stars. And so that, it's funny, you go to a concert, and I went to see Ozzy Osbourne and Black Sabbath 2 years ago. I took some of my crew guys in L.A. right before we started the season out in Pomona. And I looked around, and I probably saw a dozen drag race shirts. Some people wearing my shirts at the, and had no idea that I was standing behind them at a rock concert. And you go to any NHRA race, and you look around, and there's Foo Fighters shirts or Metallica. And it's just, it's got that same sort of vibe where it just, you're there to witness something that you've never, you know, I tell people all the time, if you haven't been, the assault on your senses is much like going to a Metallica or anything. I mean, if your favorite rock music or even country, whatever it may be, the noise, the smell, the feeling, the smile you get when you feel a race car go by on a drag strip, especially, you know, Top Fuel or a funny car, it is nothing but a smile on your face. And so, yeah, it's the same thing for me to be able to associate that, not only just as sort of that same feeling you get when you're, you know, here's the thing, drag racing for me is like a backstage show every time, because I tell people, you can't go to NASCAR, and I'm not ripping NASCAR or IndyCar or Formula One, you can't go to one of those races and go hang out and be within an arm's reach of your favorite player, your favorite member of the band, your favorite driver. You just don't get to see them that close. You go to a drag race, and every single ticket you buy, no matter reserve seat or whatever, is a pit pass comes with it. So you watch this car on the track, and you watch whoever your favorite is. Then you go down the pit area afterwards, and if it's John Force or Tony Schumacher or myself, you come up and get a picture, bring your kids up and pose and talk and ask questions, whatever it may be. And it blows people's minds that have never been to a sporting event and sort of seen that. So they're sort of getting it now, and it's funny because I always say it's like a backstage pass. Yeah. It's like going to see Metallica, watching the show, and then going backstage in between songs and rapping with James Hetfield and Kirk and Lars, and then they go, all right, we're going to go back out on stage, and you run back out in front row, and you watch them again. That's what a drag race is all about. It's that sort of intimate setting, and we still get tracks where I'm walking through the pits, and I'll just hear somebody out of earshot, like an old lady, it's maybe first time at a race, and you hear her say, oh my God, there's the driver right there. And so they don't get it at first. They think it's like a Bears game or a Blackhawks. You don't get to hang out with these players that close, you know, like you do at a drag race.
You know, it's important that you mention that. And, of course, let the listeners know we're talking with Ron Capps, legendary driver of the iconic Napa Funny Car for Don Schumacher Racing. But it is so important, right, because it is one of those totally immersive events. You get there, and when you talk about the band connections, you know, it's like, you know, there's an encore every 5 minutes, right? Because it isn't like you're waiting around 4 hours to have somebody and see if somebody wins. And nothing against all of the great motorsports. We love them all. But NHRA delivers, and it delivers, like, on a consistent basis multiple times a day, and it is great. When you talk about the ambassador side of it, and you definitely are doing that as one of the faces of the sport, and you travel around the country, and you think San Diego, you know, that's the kind of place where if you're lucky enough to grow up there, you never leave, and if you find it throughout some time in your life, you get there, and then you don't leave. But you travel the country, and you get to see so many great tracks and cities and fan bases and all that kind of stuff, and people want to know, what are some of your favorites? You know, what are some of your favorite places to go for whatever reason, whether it's the town, whether it's the music scene, whether it's the track itself or the people?
Gosh, it's a great question. I get that question probably more than any, and I can't pinpoint one. Every time I'm asked, I say, do you mean track, like track surface, or do you mean the area? Just like you posed the question, and it's funny because I have one for every category just about. Like, you know, I'll always get on Polestar or another website before I fly to a race a couple weeks out, and I'll look and see what bands are playing. And then if I know somebody with that band or with the tour manager or something, I always try to work in a day early of coming in and going to see a show, even if it's a good band at a small club, which I actually prefer. Chicago is always the best for that because there's so many good clubs. But you look at tracks like Brainerd, Minnesota, that has the what we call the zoo, which is Mardi Gras on steroids, and it's hundreds of thousands of people camping right next to the racetrack, and some of them don't even make it over to the racetrack. But at night, we all get together as a team, and all the teams do this, and you go into the zoo, and it's a campground that's insane, and it's so much fun, and you can't even believe what's going on in there sometimes. And it's sort of like Vegas. What happens in the zoo stays in the zoo a lot of times. But that's sort of the thing that comes along with that racetrack. And I'm not that that track's necessarily any better as far as with the race car, but it's just a fun place to go. So there's, you know, Sonoma's a great one in July. It's just the weather and the wine tasting for the wives and family to come hang out. So it's all got its perks and the things that we love. It's hard to say because California is my favorite and I grew up here, so I'd have to say Pomona or Sonoma is probably my absolute favorite.
Yeah, well, you think about it, and this is another part of it that doesn't translate to TV. I mean, they've got their job to do. They've got to call all the races, do a little bit of the background stuff on some of the drivers and the season and all that stuff, and they can't spend a ton of time hanging out in the zoo, you know, and so this is the kind of thing, and another reason to get out there wherever you're hearing this from, your local track, get out there and experience the racing live. You mentioned, you know, the tradition and the legends and Don Prudhomme and Big Daddy Don Garlitz, and a lot of those guys are going to be at Route 66. They've spent time there, of course, over their careers, but they'll be there this year. This is, can you believe it? It's hard to believe because I remember being, I think, at the groundbreaking for it and when they built that entire complex there. It's 20 years at Route 66. So if you could share a memory or two or any thoughts on that facility as we close in on 20.
Oh, my gosh. I remember the very first time showing up there. That track still is one of the what we call the super tracks. I mean, you don't get an arena type of feeling you get when you pull in there, that the grandstands are wrapped completely around. It's a stadium feel, and you don't get it at any other racetrack. And I remember the first time they built it, this place was state-of-the-art, and it still is, and it's fast. But again, it's funny you say that. What are some of your favorite memories of Route 66? For me, Sammy Hagar and the Van Halen guys played just up the road at the amphitheater. Nice. 1 year, and I had them all come down and hang out. Michael Anthony and the whole gang came down for the day at the racetrack, and then that night I got to take all my crew guys up and go backstage and hang out with them. And those are the kind of things that stand out. I mean, winning there has always been awesome. I've loved when we won there because my owner, Don Schumacher, is from there.
Yes.
And we have a huge contingent there. And you know, the Winter Circle celebrations are always epic there, but I'll never forget, you know, just having those guys come out and turning Sammy Hagar on to standing on the starting line and seeing that smile on his face afterwards.
It's got to be insane. And of course, yeah, Don Schumacher from the Palatine, Arlington Heights area. We've done some stuff with him over the years. Now you guys are down in Texas. But yeah, I mean, you look at it. So that's that common bond that I think motorsports have, that the cars have, that speed has, that fast has. So you get with, you know, with a Sammy Hager as a huge car enthusiast. We got a chance to, I do a lot of the food stuff here for WGN Radio too. And believe it or not, you know, Sammy's a Renaissance man, cars. He loves music. Obviously, that's his career. And even food too. He wrote it like a cookbook. So we interviewed him, and Michael Anthony has his own line of hot sauces, if you're familiar with that. So a lot of people have, you know, a bunch of different things going on. It is so cool to get them together. It's so cool to get you on too. So for people who want to follow you, obviously, you know, they can watch you during the season of the races. They'll see you out here at Route 66 in the summer. But social media wise, Facebook, all that modern stuff, how can people keep up with you?
It's RonCaps28 on Instagram and Twitter. Easy to find. And then I have a Facebook fan page. It's on Facebook, that is just my name. You can't miss it. And, you know, I like to have a lot of fun with them. And sometimes I post stuff that I cringe a little bit when I put it out there. But then you see the reaction the fans get when they kind of know what you're doing in between races. And you never know, it might be at a concert, or it might be shooting a video side of the stage somewhere, or at a sporting event, just having fun. And so it's always, you know, it's good to hear the fans when they come up and go, "Hey, man, I love following you on Instagram or Facebook or whatever it may be."
Oh, you've got a ton of fans all over, and of course, they'll appreciate being able to hang out with you, see you here at Route 66 on the 20th anniversary, and keep up with your adventures on all the social media as well. So thanks for what you're doing, and thanks for jumping on WGN today.
Anytime, Dane. I appreciate you having me.
I want to tell you right now that
Hi, this is Tracy Franklin with Glenn Fiddick, and you are on the road really with Dane on WGN.
Something's got a hold on me here. Oh, it must be love.
720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. And here on the road, we talk about so many different things, whether it's family, road trips, transformative travel, and the travels that can transform you or transport you right into maybe the best cocktail and whiskey tasting spot that you've ever been. And here to help do that, she has traveled. She has been on the road all the way from the East Coast. She is the brand ambassador for Glenfiddich, which is one of the best spirits out there. You could take it from me, from William Grant and Son, the one and only Tracy Franklin. Tracy, welcome to WGN.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is always great to have you. It's great to have you here. Of course, we've gotten the chance and the opportunity to talk in the past as you were here for the Women in Whiskey Seminar. I think this is exciting when you think about different spirits and expressions out there. It's weird, right? They have sort of kind of this brand persona, and sometimes the brand persona, maybe it's, hey, we're great for sports, or we're great for tailgating, or we're refined, you know, or we're elegant or elevated. But when it comes to whiskey, typically it is thought of as a male-centric spirit, but, you know, women can enjoy it, are enjoying it, are loving it, and you are a testament to that.
Absolutely. It's been happening forever. And honestly, within whiskey itself and within Scotch whiskey, women have been essential. They have been a part of creating some of the biggest distilleries that we work with. Within Glenfiddich, William Grant and Elizabeth, his wife, are the only reason this distillery is actually around. She was the one holding the money and taking care of the books. His youngest daughter, Mita, was there to help him when he was old and couldn't read, signed all of his contracts. So we have had women within William Grant and Sons, this family-owned company. We've had them in whiskey from the very beginning.
So many people are getting in on the whole spirits game. You're seeing a lot of micro distilleries. You're seeing, even here in Chicago, we've got some great ones and ones that have gotten some claim around the world that have started, that have popped up. They're a handful of years old. Glenfiddich is one of those that has not only a great fan base, great taste, amazing products, but also some incredible history, right?
Absolutely. We are still, there aren't very many left. Family-owned, fifth-generation company. Glenfiddich was founded in 1887 by William Grant, and we still have that same family. Every day, they are making choices to make sure that this company is around for their grandkids. So it's a really exciting industry. And also, not only have we been around for a long time, we're also at the forefront of innovation. So we're creating these cocktails and these whiskeys, and we're really trying to change the way that whiskey is perceived within the industry. So we've created this experimental series where we're actually our first one. We worked with a local brewery.
So wait a minute. Tracy, so I see you. You know, you're out there, you know, as the face of the brand, trying to engage with people and getting them excited about all the things going. But are you in the laboratory? Do you have a lab coat on, research and development, beakers? Are you doing that?
I don't get to do that as often as I would like. When we do go to the distillery, we actually go as ambassadors once a year. All of us fly in from all over the globe. We do get to actually go and sometimes test new things. I was a part of, actually Project 20 was created by the ambassadors. So each of the ambassadors was able to go into the warehouse, one of our dunnage warehouses, select some barrels. They then tasted those barrels the next day, and whichever barrel each ambassador chose as their favorite was then sent to Brian Kinsman, our malt master, to make the whiskey.
Wow.
So this is actually, that's our Project 20. It's amazing. It's got a fingerprint on the front that's actually an amalgamation of all the ambassadors that made the whiskey.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so 20 different barrels, one beautiful whiskey.
You think about this, and I know that there's purists out there that will say, if it's not broke, don't fix it, right? And you've got a lot
absolutely.
Of fans that say, don't mess with my Glenfiddich.
Yes.
But when it comes to kind of reaching out, be more things to more people, let's talk about the experimental series. Let's talk about some of these cocktails that you're making.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're really focusing on showing Glenfiddich in its, even just with our 12, just in its like true form. I did a really lovely spring sort of cocktail since it's, you know, just
nice here to think
March.
Of.
Yes. Unfortunately, it's freezing outside, but a little bit of lemon, some honey, and soda water and Glenfiddich 12.
This looks beautiful. You know, and I would say, Tracy, for those of us here in Chicago, I would call this unseasonably warm. It is it is 30-some odd degrees, and of course, the listening audience, you know, we reach 38 states in Canada at night and the greater Midwest during the day, so there's a lot of different weather that's happening.
Yes.
But as a person who comes from the East Coast, you've got, this is like, this is a tropical paradise here in Chicago, you've got to admit.
It's definitely not as cold as I thought it might be. I brought my thermals. I bought a full-on wool hat and everything
with me. You like a Hurt Locker suit?
Just in case.
Right.
I don't like being cold.
Okay.
So I did just in case, but I'm actually pleasantly surprised. And it doesn't, you know, hurt that I get to enjoy my whiskeys all day as well. So I have the IPA that we talked about in our experimental. So that one's actually whiskey that's finished in IPA seasoned casks.
Nice.
Yeah. So are you a beer drinker?
Sure.
All right. So yeah, we actually made it. It's a British style IPA though, with Challenger hops, only used in the UK. So more floral. So those floral notes really kind of accentuate the style of Glenfiddich. They bring out those citrus notes, that grassy hay, a little bit of that vanilla. So the IPA, as much as people are really worried, oh, it's IPA, it's going to be bitter, it's going to be this, it's actually very, very approachable, very sweet, very soft. I love it.
Here's the thing. You know, as Glenfiddich has been what it has been, kind of a mainstay for so long, and one of those iconic and beloved brands, as you kind of make it more things to more people and engage
yes.
other people, do you say like, hey, this may be your introduction to the spirit, but there is so much more that you can enjoy about it as you kind of move forward and try it in all of its incarnations?
Yes. And what's wonderful about Glenfiddich, and one of the reasons I think they selected me for this role, is that I love all whiskey. I love it all, and I think that everyone is putting out good products. I stand behind Glenfiddich because they are family-owned and because they are making wonderful choices in the category, and I love and support that. But everyone's going to find their way into the whiskey world on their own, and I love that with Glenfiddich, we're giving people a huge variety of diversity, of diverse flavors, for them to be able to find what makes them happy. We don't just have something that's aged 12 years, 14 years, 15
yep.
Each of those has a different flavor profile. Each of those has different cask treatments. And all of them, we have a huge range. We're going up to 50 years, 55 years for the Janet Sheed Roberts. So we also have price points for people that are really enthusiasts who want to get something unique that they've never had. Or if you're coming in as a newbie and just curious, we don't want you to have to break the bank to try Scotch whiskey.
You think about this. You mentioned that you love all whiskey. And I think there's a lot of people that would be in that same club with you. And they want to celebrate and enjoy whiskey all the time. When appropriate, of course.
Of course.
And in some realm of moderation, I guess, at times when appropriate. All that kind of stuff. But this is the one day where everybody can kind of let their whiskey flag fly.
Woo-hoo.
Right? And we are coming up on National Whiskey Day. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that's March 27th. So we're just hoping that people go out, enjoy a dram of Glenfiddich single malt on that day. If you enjoy something else, enjoy everything responsibly. But really just kind of open your mind to trying something new, something exciting. Maybe you step up and maybe you only do the 14. Step up to that 15. Give it a try. See what's delicious and exciting about that. Or if you always drink neat, maybe try it with a few drops of water. See how that opens up, what flavors expand there. Or maybe try it with a little bit of soda water and really elevate and energize that cocktail. Give a little effervescence. There's a lot that you can do with your whiskey, and we want people to just feel empowered and open-minded about drinking their whiskey.
Have a lot of fun with it. A lot of different ways to play with it. Have fun. Yeah. Enjoy the whiskey. And you've got to have some people helping to lead the way. Show them the way.
Right.
In order to best kind of enjoy everything they're doing, whether it's Glenfiddich and whiskey in general. For people who want to follow the brand and see what's new, you guys are always, like you said, innovating and doing new things. What's the website for Glenfiddich?
Yes, we have www.glenfiddich.com. And it talks about all of the new expressions that come out, but also our core range. We are going to keep that core range around for the people that do love the traditional Glenfiddichs. That 12, 14, 15, 18, 21 will always be there to make you happy.
And Tracy Fragan, an ambassador for fun, great spirits, great times, and of course, incredible Scotch whiskey and Glenfiddich. How can people follow you on social media and all the things
you're
doing?
Yes, I am on Instagram and Twitter as Glenfiddich TF, as in Tracy Franklin. And I try to share recipes and cocktails and people that are drinking whiskey. I like to sometimes just feature bartenders that are behind the bar, people that are out with me. So I'd love to have you follow me. Any ideas that you might have for things that you'd want for me to promote or to help you learn about, I'm very approachable.
Hey, that's kind of a spirit thing, right? All right, Tracy Fagan, thanks so much for what you're doing. Thanks for being on the road and coming to WGN today. Thanks for being on the show.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Hi, I'm Tommy Johnson Jr., driver of Don Schumacher Racing's Make-A-Wish Funny Car, and you're on the road with Dave on WGN.
720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, and on the line with the driver of the Make-A-Wish Dodge Charger Funny Car for Don Schumacher Racing, the racing pride of Ottumwa, Iowa, the one and only Tommy Johnson Jr. Welcome to WGN.
Good afternoon. Good to be here.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you here. Another person from the Midwest kind of sharing their thought, their love, their lifelong love for the sport as we do everything that we can to kind of get more people into NHRA and drag racing. It was never a question what you would be into there in Iowa. Is it true that you were one of the first people to get your NHRA license? Was it 15? I mean, it was early on. You knew you were going to be racing.
Yeah, everybody said, how'd you get into racing? And I said, well, I was brainwashed. My dad raced when I was growing up and spent my entire childhood at the racetrack, and actually started racing when I was 8 years old. Even before they even had junior dragsters that the kids race nowadays, I raced mini bikes at our local track, and a bunch of us kids started racing when we were about 8 years old. And I got my license when I was 15 years old. Ran my first national event when I was 15. And back then, the rule book kind of had a little gray area. It didn't say you had to be 16, just said you had to have a state license. And I was lucky enough, you could get a license when you were younger. And they said, well, I guess that's true. So I went first and ever race national event at 15 years old.
Wow. Okay, so you didn't have to necessarily be a certain age. You just had to be fast. And it's one of those things. Kids love fast things. We've got, you know, our kids, the young kids, they want to be astronauts. Who knows, down the road, they may not decide to get into a spaceship and fly off into space. But at what point did you know not only that this is something that you were interested in, your family was interested, you had all the kind of tools and opportunities in there, but that you were good? You know, this is something that you could be really great at.
Yeah, you know, a great opportunity. The little 8 mile track in Iowa, I started at. My dad raced at locally, and they were fortunate enough to have a program for young kids and started young. And that's when I knew. I said, this is what I want to do, you know. And I was able to win quite a few races when I first started out, and that just parlayed into more success. And then, you know, as everybody, like you said, everybody wants to go faster, you know. So I would drive a certain car, and like, man, I want to go faster. So just kept working my way up, a little faster car each year, and next thing you know, we're on tour.
Yeah, think about this too. At this point now, you know, you're racing with some of the greatest racers out there. You're, you know, with, you know, Hall of Fame owners, and we'll talk a little bit about that. You've got a history of that as well, traveling the country for NHRA, racing the funny car in front of millions of fans. You think of this, I just think of this, and of course, Iowa, it's as American and as Midwestern as it gets. It's an American sport, but racing is one of those things, you know, unlike, let's say, football or baseball, that is, you know, everybody around the world likes to go fast in whatever form or fashion. It was interesting to read that you have actually drag raced around the world in places that people don't, you know, they might associate it with, like, you know, where you're on skis and then you're target shooting at the same time, or skiing or some of those winter sports, but Finland, Sweden, and then places like the United Arab Emirates. So you've raced all over the world.
Yeah, I've been pretty fortunate. You know, it was kind of, it was an opportunity that I wasn't looking for, but it happened to come up. As I wasn't full-time on the tour here at in the U.S., so just didn't have a sponsorship and was out of the seat, and got an opportunity from a couple teams to go around the world and race in Australia and in Abu Dhabi and, like you said, Finland, Sweden, and England, and, you know, just all over the world. I would have never got that opportunity if I was racing full-time here. So, you know, you want to be racing here in the U.S. on the full-time tour, but it provided me that opportunity to go do that, and it's something that really nobody else has ever been able to do. I've won a race as a top field director in 6 different countries, so it's a pretty cool experience. And you know, my heart's still here racing in the U.S., but it's something in the resume, and it's been a worldly experience to be able to race all over the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really cool. You think about it, we talk here on the road on WGN, we talk, you know, Formula One, and certainly with the Indianapolis 500 coming up, and that's where you're calling us from today, is Indy. You know, there's drivers all around the world, but with drag racing, you just think of it as so distinctly American. What was the feedback like? Obviously, you know, people who love the sport and attend it, you know, there's nothing that can compete with is the sight, the sound, the smells, the vibrations, everything. When you take that to people that that maybe are not as familiar, what was kind of the response from the people around the world for drag racing?
What was really neat is you, as you travel around, you find out how passionate everybody is about this sport. And, you know, you go to these other countries and they're just as passionate about it as you are. And you know, it might be not speak the same language, or a lot of things are different when you're in a different country. But when you get to the drag strip, it's exactly the same as it is in the U.S. You know, it's 2 cars going down the drag strip, and whoever gets their first wins. And, you know, so it doesn't matter what country you're in. So it was a neat experience to see their passion and see how they follow us in the U.S. And they're, you know, ask so many questions about what we're doing over here, and just a really neat experience. And it was funny. We were in the Middle East racing, and, you know, we warm the cars up in the pits and the whole crowd gathers around. All of a sudden, I look at the back of the ropes and they're all gathered around just like they do in the U.S. You know, everybody has that passion for speed and power.
Yep, some things are universal, right? I think appreciation for speed is one of those as well. And when it comes to guidance and tutelage, you had your dad, you had your family in Iowa starting out and, kind of, like you said, moving up and wanting to be racing at that highest level, which you are right now with NHRA. And talk a little bit about kind of that mentorship, because you have worked with some of the absolute legends in the business, whether it's, you know, Don Prudhomme, whether it's Kenny Bernstein, of course, now with Don Schumacher and all the amazing things that they are doing. Talk a little bit about, it's great to race, it's great to want to race, but you got to have that great team behind you.
Yeah, you do. And I was fortunate to have the support of my parents, and, you know, we had a family team. We tried to, you know, do our best, but it's sponsorship, and, you know, and it's equipment, and we were able to do well enough that some people noticed, you know. And we just ran out of sponsorship. We parked our team, and fortunate enough to get a call from Joe Gibbs, you know, the Hall of Fame football coach. He owned a drag racing team, a couple of them at the time, and he said, "Hey, we're going to make a switch. Would you be interested in coming to work for us and driving for us since you're not racing?" I'm like, "Yeah, that sounds great." You know, so just great opportunity. Probably the break I got to go into a hired driver. You know, not driving for your family anymore, but it's you're a hired driver, paid driver to come in and perform. And got that opportunity. It was a great opportunity. Unfortunately, Joe got out of drag racing after that. Next one was Don Prudhomme. I mean, growing up as a kid, Don and the Snake Prudhomme and Tom and Mongoose McKeown, I mean, those were your idols. You know, that was to have the call from Snake to say, hey, kid, I want you to drive for me. It's, you know, I sent him a picture of me standing next to his funny car when I was about 5 years old.
Wow.
So I said, you never know what's going to happen in life. And, you know, drove for Snake for several years, drove for Kenny Bernstein, now Don Schumacher. I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that caliber of owners. And you're only as good as your equipment. You know, I mean, it's a very big team sport. You got crew chiefs, assistant crew chiefs, all the guys working on these cars, and I can only do with what they give me, and it has to be a good team atmosphere, and been fortunate to be around some really, really good teams over the years.
Well, the listeners know we're talking with driver Tommy Johnson Jr. for Don Schumacher Racing, drives the Make-A-Wish Dodge Charger, and so Joe Gibbs, right? You know, was there any thought at one point he may say, like, hey, come and drive a stock car? You never know. You've done things that a lot of people haven't, you know, one of those handful of drivers that have won at both Top Fuel and in funny cars for the uninitiated. Explain, a lot of people think, hey, you know what, you're doing almost the same thing for almost the same amount of time. What is the difference? What makes it so hard for drivers to go from one style to the other?
Yeah, everybody always says, you go in a straight line, how hard can it be, you know? But they're totally different animals. The dragsters are long, the 300 inches long wheelbase, the engine's behind the driver, they're built to go straight. I mean, they're specifically designed for what we're doing. And, you know, the funny cars evolved over the years. You know, you're inside the body, it comes down over the top of you, the engine's sitting in front of you. It's only 125 inches long, and the last thing it wants to do is go straight. So it's night and day between a dragster and a funny car. And you very much finesse a dragster. I say you kind of ride along and finesse it down through there, and it's the most unbelievable ride in the world to go 0 to 100 in less than a second, and 0 to 300 in just a little over 3 seconds. So, I mean, it's an unbelievable ride, but the funny car's similar performance. But you have to drive the car. You really have to muscle it around. You have to be on top of it. They're accelerating so fast and want to go the direction they're pointed, it's your job to keep that car straight. And it's hard to see. You're sitting right behind the engine. It's right in front of your feet. And you're trying to look over it out through a windshield that's vibrating, and you're traveling down the track at over 300 miles per hour. It can be a little difficult sometimes to keep that thing going straight, but just an awesome ride. I love the funny cars. Everybody says, what you like better? I love the challenge of a funny car.
He loves the challenge of a funny car. Well, you have traveled, you've raced all around the world. And of course, you know, this season, you ended last season with a bang, and now sixth in points for this season. So you're going to love to get out there and do some great things on the track as we move forward through the season. This is the 20th anniversary for Route 66. This is one of those tracks that so many drivers really do appreciate. Of course, we appreciate you guys coming here every year. So as we get closer to that 20th anniversary, you know, any thoughts on Route 66, your experiences there?
Yeah, it's hard to believe it's been 20 years, you know, and as a driver, you have favorite tracks on the tour, and I always say my favorite track's the one I do well at, and Route 66 Raceway is just one of those tracks where I don't know what it is. You show up every year, and you do well. You go rounds, you win the race, you come back the next year, and you do well again, and you know, I've had such success there the last 3 or 4 or 5 years at that event, and we were able to win it, I think, once or twice, and be in the final, I think, 3 times. You know, it's just a great event for us and just a fabulous facility. It's one of the best on the tour, the stadium atmosphere. You get to feel these cars. Like you said earlier, the horsepower of these cars, we're 11,000 horsepower. And you not only hear that, I mean, it's loud, but you feel it. It shakes the ground when these things run. And to see one of these cars accelerate that quick, that fast, it's something you have to see in person. I tell everybody, yeah, they're cool to watch on TV, but you need to come to the track so you can feel it. This thing shakes the ground. It moves stuff inside your body you didn't even know you had.
Great. Well, here's the thing. Racing in general, that is absolutely 100% of the truth, and we preach that on a regular basis. But when it comes to drag racing, it could not be truer because, right, like you said, there are so many, every single sense, and ones you didn't even know you have get, I don't want to say assaulted, but they certainly get introduced to some new vibrations, and it's exciting. So we're excited to have you. I know everybody is really looking forward to that 20th anniversary. All the fans going to be pouring in to Route 66 and your fans all around the country as well. For those people who want to follow you on social media or with the team site, do you have any ways people can keep up with you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, TommyJohnsonJr.com. We have ShoeRacing.com, which is Don Schumacher's website. And, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, Instagram, all of it. TommyJohnsonJr_Jr. And, you can look us up. Guys do a great job of keeping up. I'm a Twitter guy. I like to go on Twitter and update everybody once in a while. And if I'm busy in the seat, I got people doing it for me.
TommyJohnsonJr.com, running for Don Schumacher Racing in the Make-A-Wish funny car. Do you ever have a kid that comes in and his wish, his dream is that you win the championship this year?
Well, I know my wish is, but you know, we represent Make-A-Wish. We had a great lady that passed away last year. Actually, while we were at the event in Route 66, she passed away, but she funded this entire team and was such a great person. She donated it away to charity. She wanted to raise awareness about what great things Make-A-Wish does for these kids. And we're able to have a group of kids every race on Saturday. We bring a group of kids out, them and their families, let them just have a good time and relax and enjoy themselves. You know, they're going through some tough times, and if we can bring them out and just let them be normal, and it's been very rewarding. I tell you, to see those kids come out and cheer on the Make-A-Wish car, and we've actually been able to be part of a wish. We've been 3 wishes now we've granted that had something to do with racing. I even got to take a young guy on a ride in a 2-seat dragster, and we won the race, and wow, he got the trophy for his team. That was his wish, to win a trophy for his team, and we were able to do that.
Oh, that is some great stuff. It's one thing to have amazing racing, but also when you can add in some fantastic causes as well with Make-A-Wish. You know you are ahead of the game. So, Tommy Johnson Jr., thanks so much for what you're doing. We're going to see you here in Chicago. Encourage listeners to keep up with you on social media, and thanks for being on WGN today.
I appreciate it, man. Can't wait to get there. Can't believe it's been 20 years, but this might be the best one ever.
My pappy said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln.
Hi, this is racing historian Stan Kalwazinski on the road with Dane, WGN Radio.
Have you heard the story of the hot rod race with the Fords and Lincolns was setting the pace? That story is true. I'm here to say I was driving that Model A.
720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. and honored to have as we touch on not only the future of racing, all the exciting things happening in all the different series, but also the great history and legacy of racing that Chicago, Chicagoland, and Illinois has here in motorsports. And there's been a guy that's had his hand on the pulse of so much of it. I don't think anybody knows more about all the things that are going on than our guest. He has been a writer, a journalist, a photographer, an announcer at many of the different speedways. You know him for a dozen years at Northwest Indiana Times, of course, National Speed Sport Magazine. It is the one and only Stan Kalwaczynski. Stan, welcome to WGN.
Thanks, Dane. Thanks for having me today.
Now, this is a thing where, and I think racing fans, and we talk about it all the time, is once you get an opportunity to be there in person, you're hooked typically for life. When that happens is up to you, whether you've got a family connection or maybe just it's kind of built, maybe hardwired into you. But when it comes for the love of racing at all sizes, and this isn't necessarily just those major series that you see on TV, but racing in general, and here in Illinois, Stan, you have had it since the get-go.
Yeah, pretty much. Probably 4 or 5 years old, and my parents took me to a little track called 87th Street Speedway on 87th Street in Chicago on the southeast side, and I was hooked. I mean, they weren't race fans. They just took me as to entertain, I guess, their little boy, and I was hooked. And a fella down the street had a race car in the alley in Chicago where we lived, and it was just one thing after another. And like I said, my dad wasn't a big race fan, but we just would beg him. I would beg him to take me to the stock car races.
Wow. It isn't necessarily something that you always hear, at least not necessarily something that gets a lot of attention here in Illinois. But there was a time when there was so much more racing than people nowadays would probably understand, know, or be able to appreciate. One of those first races was it on 87th Avenue? I mean, it was in the city of Chicago in a place where there was probably a lot more racing going on than there is now.
Yeah, that track closed up after the 1956 season, but I was doing some research here recently, and probably around 1960, there was probably a dozen tracks, venues, that were having weekly racing or special events, both asphalt oval tracks, dirt tracks, and sports car racing, road course racing up there in Carpentersville at the Meadowdale Speedway. So a lot of action going on in 1960, probably, like I said, a dozen tracks or so.
And maybe around that time and even a little bit further, we all think of Soldier Field. You know, it is one of the iconic structures. And I think in sports, of course, they've adjusted it quite a bit, and it's way less iconic now. But the history is there and so identified with the Chicago Bears as it should be. But what a lot of people don't know, it was a big racing venue back in the day.
Yeah, I've got the title of a little presentation. Yes, dear, they did race stock cars at Soldier Field, and starting in 1949, that was the first stock car race there at Soldier Field, and they raced there pretty much every year through 1968. For I think one year they didn't race was I think 1959. They tore up the track, the asphalt track, for the Pan American Games there, and you know, midget automobile racing, small midget cars, 75-inch wheelbase cars, open wheel, open cockpit cars. They raced there back in 1935. So from about 1935 to 1968, there was some type of motorsports going on there at Soldier Field.
And then even a little bit west, you know, we think of, you know, Heinz Hospital and the Loyola Hospital complex. It's just a big thing that's out there. Maybe I think it's Maywood, right, is the town that it's in. And that used to be another kind of racing hotbed as well.
Yes, I mean, that's kind of a real hidden gem as far as racing history goes in the Chicago area. It was called Speedway Park, and it was a 2-mile high-banked wooden board track. And it operated from 1915 through 1918. And it was the owners and the people behind it, the backers of it, the management group, they were really trying to go neck and neck with the Indianapolis 500. And but can you imagine these cars, big open-wheel cars, big high tires, nothing, you know, not much grip to the track and splinters flying and the track kind of coming apart, and these cars are really rolling around there. And they raced there from 1915 through 1918. It just never quite caught on. And then I think the maintenance of the track, reading, doing some homework on this and research, you know, just the maintenance of the track to keep it going, kind of brought it to a close. And yes, it's right there by that Loyola Heinz Veterans Hospital complex right there. I think that's like 12th Street and 1st Avenue.
Wow. You think of all the ideas throughout history that end up on the cutting room floor. And as a guy in and around racing, you'll understand the importance of sponsors. I'm thinking Pine Sol would have been great for that, you know.
Keep your wooden floors clean. Use Pine Sol.
Right, like the driver would come out. This is what I use on my floor and the track. Well, think about this. You know, they say for dirt track racing, you know, it's not really racing if there's not dirt in your beers. And maybe there could have been a whole different thing, an alternative reality. Like, you're not racing unless you do have a lot of splinters.
Yeah. And I mean, they were reading some stories, some race results and in the Chicago Tribune. I mean, the splinters are, you know, hitting the drivers and hitting them in the face. And it was just kind of high speed. I mean, you know, this is kind of the beginning of racing, really, you know, as we know it today.
Well, there is a lot of racing going on in Chicagoland, not so much with the wooden floors, and maybe, you know, that is an improvement. But talk a little bit about some of these tracks that we got. I know that we've had last year on the show during the season, you know, we had some reads and some tickets to give away for Sycamore Speedway. There's some great racing happening. So you don't always have to wait until, you know, NASCAR comes to town once a year. You can enjoy racing all summer.
Yeah, there's quite a few tracks still in the area. You mentioned the Sycamore Speedway. That's out there west of St. Charles on Route 64 between St. Charles and the town of Sycamore. And there's the Grundy County Speedway. They race in Morris, Illinois. They race on Friday nights. It's a paved track. Kankakee County Speedway and LaSalle Speedway, dirt tracks out there in their respective areas. And just a lot of racing going on, you know, still on a weekly basis starting late April or 1st of May through and past through the Labor Day weekends.
Yeah, I want to let the listeners know, again, we're talking with acclaimed longtime racing historian, correspondent, writer. Some of the photos are great. Stan Kawasinski, he is on the line with us as well. So let's talk about, you know, as we think about some of those stars of racing, and some of them seem like they have very little in common, you know, with us here in the Midwest or Chicagoland and things like that. But it isn't necessarily that true. I remember, you know, maybe 15 years ago talking as they were putting in Chicagoland Speedway, talking with Richard Petty and bringing up Fred Lorenzen. And you could tell that this was a person, whether it was a competitor or a nemesis, right, that was very important to him. Chicago has had, right here in the Elmhurst area, actually, has got one of the biggest stars in all of NASCAR.
Yeah, Fred Lorenzen, who lived in Elmhurst, Illinois, kind of cut his teeth on the short tracks of Chicagoland. He raced at Soldier Field. He also raced at a track called O'Hare Stadium, which was right at Mannheim and Irving Park Road in the, I guess you'd say, the shadows of O'Hare International Airport. And he ended up moving down south to become one of the top drivers. He was, a few years ago, was ranked one of the top 50 drivers in NASCAR history. He was the first NASCAR driver to win over $100,000 in one season, and that was 1963. And he ran kind of a limited schedule. He didn't run all the races, and he raced for a team based out of Charlotte, North Carolina, known as Holman Moody. And they were like the premier Ford factory team back in the day.
Yep. I mean, so you think about it, won the Daytona 500, did everything that you can do in a stock car at the time, and has been completely embraced as one of the greatest drivers in NASCAR history, is down there in the Hall of Fame as well. So Stan, as a guy who has been seeing it since 5 years old, all the way up until now, where you can do anything you want, go anywhere you want, when it comes to Chicagoland racing, you know, what are some of your favorites? What are the things you're going to be doing this summer?
Well, there's a lot of racing going on. They're going to be opening up at the LaSalle Speedway in Easter weekend, Friday, Saturday. They have their on the dirt there, their annual Thaw Brawl, and hopefully Mother Nature will cooperate that weekend. And I go out there to Grundy County Speedway in Morris, Illinois for the Friday night racing. I'm looking forward to Chicagoland, the NASCAR weekend out there. That's, you know, they've changed the dates around a little bit. It's going to be late June, and the 1st of July is the cup race there. So I don't know. I'm just looking for, and I go all over. I kind of travel down south into central Illinois and into Indiana for some racing. Also, I am based in Indiana, I should say, and live here in Munster, Indiana. So I try to get around to all the tracks, and there's some great racing. If you want to drive an hour, 2 hours, you can see some great racing throughout the Midwest.
Yep, some of the best racing that I've seen has not necessarily been at those giant tracks for those giant events. There's so much great stuff to get out there, and you never know what's going to resonate with you as far as the style. But racing is great wherever you go. And so, Stan, when you're talking about this, we talked about the Hall of Fame down there in Charlotte, North Carolina. What a great kind of legacy and history we have here in Illinois, and you're a big part of the Illinois Stock Car Hall of Fame.
Yeah, the Illinois Stock Car Hall of Fame, which was established in 2012, really with the big driving force behind it was Art Fireball Furman, and he was a former racer at Santa Fe Speedway out there in Willow Springs that closed up, after the 95 season, I guess it was. But Art and myself and several others just thought that race drivers, stock car drivers in particular, in the state of Illinois, need to be honored and recognized. So we've done that since 2013. Every year we've had an awards banquet, or I should say maybe an induction banquet, ceremonies banquet. And the fans kind of vote these drivers in, you know, and it's just a lot of great history there. And it's the home of the Hall of Fame is a historic auto attractions museum in Roscoe, Illinois. And that's coming up, you know, this weekend, matter of fact. So it's going to be kind of neat this Saturday to meet and greet some of the greats of Illinois stock car racing.
For people who want to get out there and see some of those things, get involved, participate, support some of the events, how can they kind of keep track of and get involved with the Illinois Stock Car Museum?
Well, I think the best thing to do is just go on the internet there, and it's www.IllinoisStockCarHallOfFame.com. is the website, and it's probably the, you know, the best way to go, and gives you all the information, history, and for events in the past and in coming up.
And for you personally, Stan, as you travel around all over the place, I know we're going to have you here on WGN kind of keeping us up to speed with some of the local racing periodically, so we enjoy looking forward to that. But for people who want to keep up with you, any social media or places where people can see some of the photographs or some of the writing or keep up with some of the things you're doing?
Yeah, we're kind of not that skilled, challenge, I guess, is the word technically. And I have a website myself. It's www.ChicagolandAutoRacing.com. And we've got just a ton of history on there, photographs, stories on drivers, the old tracks in the area. And we try to keep that history alive, I guess, or in the forefront.
Encourage people to keep up with you. And Stan Kalasinski, one of the very, very best in the business. Honor to have you on. And thanks for jumping on WGN today.
It's my pleasure, Dane. Really nice talking to you.
720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. And again, we're going to have all of our great interviews with Ron Capps, Tommy Johnson Jr., even Tracy Franklin from Glenfiddich, and of course Stan Kalasinski, the historian, the preeminent racing historian for Chicagoland, Illinois, and the Midwest area. We're going to have them up at WGNRadio.com in a little bit after the show. So, Camille, one of the other things that I know we're all excited about, and we had Danny Rocket on as he kind of made that road trip to spring training of the Cubs. It's over, right? The Cubs are going to be starting up. They're going to be all making that trip back here for the long haul, hopefully towards another World Series.
It's my favorite time of year. Absolutely my favorite time of year. Last year, I think I was telling you, I went to the most games in one season that I had ever gone to before. I think that was six games? Six?
That's all? That's the most ever? I thought you were like
expensive.
A big fan.
I'm young. All right. My money goes to my student loans the Cubs.
Also, too, is in the reason that you became a Cubs fan, it wasn't by accident. It's like your dad is a huge Cubs fan. Mm-hmm. I think you have a picture up on like your Instagram of you as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, being, you're not a hostile witness, but it certainly wasn't necessarily all your idea to go to the game. And so this is your dad excited as well that the season's going to start? Has he got high hopes?
I think he does. Being able to, I came home one weekend for the World Series when they were home because I was still at school, and I got to experience that with him. That was great. Although most of our experience was trying to find a place that would let us in to watch the game.
There's still laws back then, I guess.
Well, no, it was just everywhere was packed.
Oh, gotcha.
All and right. We had to go all the way to Wicker Park to even find somewhere to watch the game.
The one thing that this show and the Cubs and also the White Sox, our beloved White Sox, as we are the flagship for them, has is Bone of Beef. Congratulations on them. Their new location in Schererville, Indiana, the first location outside of the physical limits of Illinois. And so Bona.com, go and get all the information that you can on that. And a couple interviews that we're going to have that I'm excited about. We're going to have Anthony Rizzo is going to be on with us in the next week or so to talk. He's going to mention a little bit about his sandwich, right? We're going to ask him about his foundation, talk about the season. And then also Luke Bryan, which is one of your favorite people in the whole world.
Well, yes.
Well,
How important he is to country music right now. He's like, yeah, I'm trying to think of a comparison and nothing good's coming into my mind. But if you think country music right now, contemporary country, you think Luke Bryan.
You think Luke, unless you're really excited about the Loyola game coming up, then you think Loyola, which is, and I'm sure the guys from the Beat are going to be talking about that as well as the White Sox and so much sports going on in that world. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll send it to news and send it to the Beat. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN.